well, geez, I think, you know, this is really what I love to talk about, because as I told you all last night and tell new people today, this is the insight into these principles changed my life. And it changed the way I helped people. When you look at psychotherapy, helping people through psychotherapy, there are like over 400 approaches to helping people, huh? How many ideas are there to help people? And I was caught up in, you know, I was trained traditionally as a psychologist, so I learned a lot of different ways. And I did a good job at it. But when I had a realization about the nature of these principles, I saw there was just a simple thing people needed. I used to have, I don't know if any of you were around in the 70s. It was in San Francisco. What you would do with therapy, in a group, everybody would be sitting on these huge pillows with psychedelic pillowcases. And when somebody came in angry, you'd have them imagine that person on one pillow, and you'd start having the person beat it. And that was supposedly a very insightful way. It was like one of the most... it sounds funny now. I don't mean to make fun. I don't really mean to make fun of this, but maybe I do mean to. what I saw then was... people never got over it, though. They never got over it. So they would get feeling better in the session. And a few people would get some realization somewhere along the way about how to handle with life with that person, but not everybody did. I didn't know what else to do, though. And then I had this realization. I realized it's really simple. Tell people one thing. Thought creates feeling. So I'm going to share with you the foundation for that statement to people. So one of the things to see is that we're all part of an energy. A formless energy, call it a spiritual energy because it's formless, that exists before any physical form, that brings life, that creates life. It's the intelligence behind the universe. And it is actually the energy before the universe. And there's an intelligence, if we're going to give something formless something. There's an intelligence to this energy that we are all a part of. Every living thing is a part of that energy. We call that mind. But you know, in science, everybody's looking for it. If you look at all the different types of science, they all know there's something going on before the physical nature they're dealing with. Like, you know, for example, a biologist can give you the intricate details of the anatomy of a heart, but knows there's something that gives that life, that biologist just knows there's something there before that physical form. And for me, what is meaningful about getting a feel for mind, you're not going to figure out the spiritual essence of life, huh? The energy that you are and all living things are from. You're not going to get that. But I get a feel for it, and what it gives me is the sense that we're all connected. That we don't look connected. You look different than I. Thankfully, a lot of you look better than I do. You know, another try at a joke. I gotta get. You gotta. Do you have a writer?
No, wait.
It's not a learning curve. I've been on it for years. I need a writer. Anybody? Somebody's a writer in here. I need you.
You're in Hollywood. We'll start you out. Don't worry.
Yeah, I made fun of myself.
I mean, it's at you, not with you, but I mean, it's a start.
This is beautiful, though, because it squared me up with my clients. It squared me up with my wife, with my family, with my friends. We're all the same. We're all connected. I don't know more than you. There's no way any human being, no matter what they come in front of you with, has any less intelligence for life than you. And so that helped me. Because people came to see me all different shapes and sizes and forms of thinking. And it helped me to know we were the same. It didn't matter what they were saying. It didn't matter what was going on in them emotionally. It didn't matter. I mean, like, I helped make sure they were okay. Of course, you know, you look for that, of course. But deep inside, I knew we were the same, and all we were doing is looking for that. All we were doing together is looking for that. And that's how my understanding of mine helps me, is I know that we're connected, that we're all from mind. All living things are connected. And the other piece to mind that helps me is this sense of intelligence. And this is how it makes sense to me, because it seems like if you look at all living things, it seems like there's an intelligence that's guiding them or they are a part of. I'm just talking simply. I don't know much about plants, but you know, they seem to have an intelligence about what minerals to take from the soil and so forth, huh? And how to look for light. And our bodies seem to have an intelligence. I mean, if I have a cut or a wound, I don't know what cells to direct. Mark Howard here doesn't know what cells do I get going to heal that wound. I don't know. I trust that my body will take care of itself if it's okay. Huh? I don't have to worry about that. I just trust there's an intelligence that'll heal. I mean, I think I'm really grateful for that, because I wouldn't know what to do. I wasn't really that good in anatomy, or biology, so I wouldn't really. I'd be at a loss. But for us, in terms of living life, that intelligence is there too. And I was just coaching a client the other day, and we were talking about this, because the first time I started to get a sense of this and hear about mind in this way, or see mind in this way, this is just my way of talking to you about it. So you'll find your way, and Michael will have his. It started to relax me about life, that I started to listen for an intelligence. You know that continuum that Michael said, that aperture starts to open. So I started to wait to hear from the premium channels of my life, of my consciousness, rather than just listening to channel 4 and 5. I started to trust that I was a part of something greater than what I was facing, what I was thinking I was facing. And that's helped me through life to know that. And it's helped me relax, because really it's not up to me. And the one thing that I don't really know this, I know it, but I don't know it deeply. But Sydney Banks does, and it's helped me to hear him say that we're guided to find this. We're guided in life to find the truth, to find this knowledge. That's the game of life, and there's an intelligence guiding us. And there's a videotape that was made in Santa Clara County, which is a big area up in Northern California. that brought the principles into a whole community. And they have a woman on the tape who was on the streets in drug addiction for 30 years, who went to this residential treatment center for women that was all principles-based. And she heard the principles and shifted overnight. And then she told us that she realized what we were talking about in terms of mind, that it was guiding her on the streets. She couldn't hear it deep enough to get off the streets, but she heard it guiding her to know where danger was, when the dealer wasn't a good person to go to. She was starting to share with us that this intelligence helped her at the level she was functioning. I thought that was really beautiful. It touched me to see that way of looking at mind, what we are, what we have going for us. So that's mind. The spiritual energy before life, before any physical form. I was just listening to an audio tape by Sidney Banks. He said it's before time existed. Now I can't get my head around that, but it helps. It just get a good feeling for that, you know, that we're a part of something so great that we can count on having this wisdom occur to us to help us in our lives. And we're all a part of that. I don't care who's in your life. They're a part of it. I'll tell you a story. I don't think I'll share this with Martha, but my sister-in-law, I've known my sister-in-law a long time. She's my wife's sister. And she's like a sister to me. But early on in family gatherings, she bugged the crap out of me. She was so opinionated, you know. And of course, I'd get reactive to that. Then, you know, we'd have a little something, you know. We disconnect or I'd say something. So I'm learning the principles. I had that insight into the nature of thought. And I'll share that with you as we go along. So I'm sitting in the family gathering. And she's starting to do Martha's thing. And I could actually see myself leaning toward bother. And it occurred to me, hold on. And I settled down. So here's the wisdom, hold on. It just occurred. It was no strategy. It didn't come from reading a book. Hold on, settle down. And then it occurred to me, you know what? That's just her way. And then I realized, you know, that's Martha when she just gets a little nervous about things. And then that's what she does. And I saw her in a whole new light. This is just a person in insecure thought, getting nervous. And then this is her expression of that. And my heart went out to her. So I'm just sharing you this story because it's, to me, a story of what can happen very simply because of the connection we have to mind, to this innate wisdom. So I'm sitting there feeling this love for her, really. That's what it was, love. It awakened my heart. That's what's on the paper back there. So yeah. I get the merits.
Yeah, Mark promised he wouldn't talk about anything that he'd written about on his piece of paper at the back. So
I have all this love, you know. And I am not bothered. And so the night goes on and all. And so everybody's leaving. You know, we stay the last to leave. And all of a sudden she gives me a hug and she says, "You're my best brother-in-law."
Probably the only one, too.
The only one, too. No, Deb. There's another one. No, Deb. Boy. There's somebody to compare me to.
He must be a real pill. I just...
But don't take this down, Deb. We were on a high note there. So you see, I mean, we didn't leave like that. I mean, like we always said we loved one another, but not that depth. Now why? She felt it. She felt the understanding that we were connected. And I'll tell you something. When I feel that with my clients, they know it. They settle down. They come to me. When I see it with my wife or my son, we get there. When I don't, you just can't get aligned. And that's the only thing. It's just you're not aligned with the fact that you're connected to one another. Okay, so there's mind. So from this formless energy, we also have this capacity to create. We get a creative energy. And it's called thought. Thought, again, is this formless energy, but it gives us the power to create. And what we create is thinking. We create anything. Anything we could talk about that would be our thinking. Ideas, concerns. Memories, judgments. But the ability to have that is coming to you from this power you have to think. And that's what I woke up to. That's the realization I had. I didn't have it as clearly as I'm sharing with you, but I touched that understanding that I create my experience moment to moment of life through this beautiful power I have to create thinking. And it shifted me from how I was taught from a youngster all the way to, at that time, I forgot how old I was, like 31, maybe something like that. I used to think, and at times when I lose sight of this, I still do think, that my experience of the moment is coming from the outside in, from other people, my boss, my wife, anybody, you name it, I've been there. But what I woke up to was that's not really the case. I am really a part of something greater that is giving me the capacity to create an experience of life. And I live in that completely. I live in that reality completely. Whether it's greed, worry, insecurity, love, joy, I am in it as long as I'm thinking that way. So, back to Seinfeld. There's a Seinfeld episode, I don't know if you know of this episode, about the bubble boy. Well, apparently, in this one town, there's a bubble boy. And the boy lives in a plastic bubble because were he to not live in the bubble, he'd catch some bad disease and die. And anyhow, they goof it all up, you know, as they would. The bubble boy wanted to meet Jerry Seinfeld. So they all goof it up. But that's us. We live in our own bubble, our own reality, created from thought. Nothing, again, right or wrong about it. That's just what we're doing. And we live in it as long as we have that thought. And then the next thought, we live in that reality of things. And that's how we're experiencing life moment to moment. I had a client come to me a few years ago. She was like 85. And she said, I said, well, you know, why are you here? What can I help you with? And she said, you know, Mark, I'm healthy. There's nothing wrong with me. But I know I'm like 85, so I don't have much life left. I've been depressed for 25 years. I want to live the rest of my life happy. I say, I'll see if I could help with that. So we're talking about the principles, different ways. I'm coming at it all different ways, you know. And it's going like 6 meetings, and it's going nowhere. Is this making sense to you? I'm not sure. Can you tell me something? Can you say it another way? You know, I said, have you read this book? You know, and all, you know. And finally, you know, I just thought, I don't know, I was just flabbergasted. I said, Mabel, are you ever, is there ever a moment you're happy? And she said, yeah, there is. I was like, what? I said, Mabel, you really think there's really a time when you're happy? She said, yeah. I go, well, when is it? She goes, when I wake up. So I said, now, Mabel, when you wake up, you're happy. Yes. So then I said, well, what happens to it? She says, well, gosh, by the time my feet hit the slippers, I remember I'm depressed. You get it? You get it? Well, I had her then. I had her then. I said, Mabel, do you see that thought? You're right, Mark. Yeah. The minute you hit the your feet hit the slippers, you start remembering you were a bad wife to your husband. Your friends don't call you anymore. You've got a bleak outlook for the day. See, all of that you start remembering, and all that is thought. That's all we're talking about. Oh, I get it. All of a sudden she started to see. And that was her way back to her well-being and happiness. But isn't that amazing? Isn't that something? And that's what we're doing. We're doing that moment to moment because we have this wonderful gift to do that. That's how we know life. I mean, that's how we know friendship. That's how we know love and understanding. We can't have an experience without it coming to us through thought. And what I have noticed through the years, this is the hope of the principles. When you tell people something about the nature of thought, it gives them hope. And the hope is this. It was the hope I saw that first night, and this is the hope. Man, if I could really live this, I'd be happy. Now, that first night, I didn't get it completely. I was on that learning curve. But I had the hope. I knew this was truth. I knew it was this simple. Yet, it looks complicated, huh? Because, man, I can't go memorize something and I'm there. But I know I had it, and I know it's something in me that woke up. And if I keep looking in that direction, more will come. I knew that. So there's the hope. And it's just, all you are is really, every moment, creating a reality you live in. You're like an artist with a blank slate or whatever they use, canvas, blank canvas, dipping your paintbrush into thought, the power of thought, and painting your day, your moment. It could be a desert scene. It could be a bleak scene. It could be hopeful scene. But you're the artist. You have to see that it's coming from a power you have to do that. And that's what's giving you the experience of your life. A funny story about this just came to mind for me. You want to hear it?
Yes.
Yeah? Some people have already heard it, but it just came to me, so I'll say it again. This one night, I mean, it's just illustrating thought. That's all I'm doing is having a conversation with you, hoping this points to something you see for yourself. And you tell me if I should, keep on with these stories. But one night I'm coming home from work. It's late. It's a late night at the clinic for me. And there's a market close to our house, so I'm going to stop at the market and get some food, cook it fast, eat and get to bed, because I've got an early day the next day. So at that time, this market company, this supermarket company, thought, and it's a pretty good idea, that if you greeted your customers, they'd welcome them, they'd start to feel good about coming to the store. So I go in, and there's somebody at the door, and they greet me, and they say, hello, how are you? And I go, oh, hey, I'm fine, how are you? I'm good. And so I go down the aisle, and I just hit the night. It was already late, so they're stocking shelves. So I hit another employee as I'm picking up this little can here of what I was going to get. And they say hello, and they ask me how I am. I say, hi, I'm fine, how are you? Good. You know, the next aisle, somebody else I run into who's stocking. They go, hi, how are you? I go, oh, I'm good. How are you? So already I'm shifting in my thinking. I could feel it, you know. What's going on here? Like, that's enough. So I've gotten a whole different, I'm in a different experience. Well, unfortunately, I run into another person who's stalking, and what do? Hi, how are you? And I'm gone. I say, the hell with this? What's this? Wait. And I say, listen, here's what I say. I say, listen, you know, the guy at the door knows how I am. Go ask him. Honestly. Now, I'm thinking it's coming from the company. As I round it, I'm still in that reality. So thoughts are coming in through that reality. I'm thinking, this company, man, they ought to hire me to show them how to really do customer service. And here I am all bothered, you know. And then all of a sudden, in comes the understanding. I'm walking up to check out and boom. Oh, Mark, your thinking went south. Bingo, I'm in a whole different reality. I'm in a different reality now. I'm living in a different experience of life. I got my bearings back. Then it says, hey, man, that poor guy on that last aisle, you got to go say something to him, you know. I'm that kind of person. So I go, and I say, hey, sorry about that, you know. I just got and got caught up in it. Oh, no problem. So now that's a whole nother reality, isn't it? You see how they shift with thought? That's what we are. We're a thinker. And from that thinking comes our experience. It was just the same thing coming my way. It was just employees saying the same darn thing. And I was having a different experience of it each time. It's coming from within me through the power I have to think any way I want to think about this. So I check out. Guess what they ask me when I check out? But I'm all right, see? So I'm in a different way of thinking about it, and I can have a conversation. And I have a great conversation. Now it's a wonderful story. See? It's a wonderful, teachable story. But we're all like this. This is what I talk about in terms of the principles not being something beyond you. That it's just being living in the human condition so that you know, why am I in this right now? Well, like last night I was saying, you were just on the freeway of well-being, and you just took the exit toward anger. And you just started to drive. And that's all that's happened. You just got on the bus. Now, the beautiful thing, the hope here. Here's the hope. The hope is you can know this. You can know this. And when you know this, you get freedom from your usual way of thinking. That was like what was so beautiful in my work, because my work was in the field of addiction at Kaiser in Redwood City. I ran that program, and my clients were addicted. And the hope was this. They could understand the nature of thought and rise above that conditioned thinking. That's the hope of us. We can rise above our personality. We're no personality. We're just a bunch of habitual thoughts. And once we catch on to the nature of thought, we can transcend that. So that's the hope of thought. Very hopeful. Does that make sense to people? And then consciousness. Consciousness really I thought you said it beautifully last night. It's just an awareness of life. It's just an awareness of our thinking. That we can be aware of what we've created. Consciousness and thought work together to give us the complete package. So the minute you have a thought, consciousness brings everything to bear to it. And all of a sudden, you're in it and it looks like a fact. Thought is this spiritual energy to allow you to manifest your thinking so it looks to you like a fact. And consciousness supports it. And so you're living in something that does not look like thought at all. Somebody was saying last night to me, I got all in all this reaction. I didn't even know it was my thinking. Of course you don't. Neither do I. I don't go around, oh, that feeling's coming from thinking, Mark. Oh yeah, and that feeling's coming from thinking. I'm not doing that. I'm in it. I'm in life. And what I'm grateful for is having a little glimpse of what we're sharing together today in this conversation of where my experience comes from, because that shows itself as a thought. That shows itself as a thought. I don't have to think my way there. It shows itself as a thought. Oh, look where your thinking's going today. So consciousness just brings your creation to life. So I share something that kind of shares the experience of it, and then we'll just kind of check in to see how people are doing. So when I was in high school and college, I played in bands. I played guitar in a lot of bands, and we played around San Francisco a lot. And this one day, I'm driving on this freeway up in Northern California. It's a beautiful freeway, 280. And I'm relaxed. And the song comes on that I played with my band in high school. So I have a memory, thought of myself playing in that band. It comes to me. I give that thought attention. And all of a sudden, I start feeling myself playing in the band. I start seeing my fellow bandmates. I see the audience. I see the auditorium. I feel myself, the excitement of playing. All of a sudden, I'm there. A memory, which is thought, I engage it. I am fully in that reality. I am there. If somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Where are you, Mark?" I'd say, "Well, I'm playing with this band. I'm not driving on 280. And that's consciousness and thought working together. That's why, post-traumatic stress syndrome is talked about so much these days. It's memory. I'm not saying anything about it not being serious and important to take care of. But the whole fact of it is the same thing. It's memory from the past coming now with thought, and it comes alive with consciousness, and people experience something that was traumatic right now. That's how it can be that way. And the hope for people is to let them know that's all that's going on. And it helps them start to transcend that. It helps them understand that they can start to ease off that. So that's consciousness. Consciousness is just an awareness of what you've created through thought, and it brings that thinking to life for you so that you feel like you're in the whole package. So the principles. You're alive. You have the intelligence of the universe behind you. You think. And you're thinking, you can be aware of your thinking and have it come alive for you. Mind, thought, and consciousness. So I hope that made sense. Hope that was helpful to hear that. You know, I'm listening to the quiet in the room and feels profound to me. Anybody have anything they'd like to share or have a question? Yes.
Yeah. Can we get the microphone around just really quick? Sorry.
I was fascinated with what you were saying about the analogy of post-traumatic stress disorder when someone has a thought from the past that brings them into that same situation in the present. If in that case, when someone is aware of the fact that it's only a thought and they don't have to entertain it anymore, I'm not saying it would be easy to stop that syndrome, but it's very fascinating to give them the power to have the control over continuing to go to that place as though it were real.
See, that's the beautiful thing of what you just shared. Now, what you just shared, I forgot the words you used, that first piece. When a human being can understand that, they're free of it.
Because now they can just look at it almost as an observer and say, okay, well, there that is again. But I can choose to not go there anymore.
Yeah, you
see. And you step back from it.
Yeah. The piece to see is that, here's the piece to see. I'm sorry I threw that in the end because it's such a major topic, you know.
Wow, it's huge.
Yeah, but it's just, I meant it more as an example of the nature of thought. But here, you said it, the first two things you said is where to hang. Where to hang. Because the minute we see that the past, because we're all bringing the past to light. The minute we can see, it's just a thought of the past carried through time now. That all we're having is a memory of that. And because we engage it, that's what you said, you engage it. When you engage it, it comes to life. You've painted the landscape and now you're living in it. Now, if a person sees that, at their level of insight, realization, the level of understanding, in that moment, they're free. And if they keep reflective to that, they become an observer of it. They're free of it. They transcend. They live at another level of thinking.
All of a sudden, something that was so incredibly powerful that it would have somebody almost bound is that quick. It's just powerless.
That quick. It's just that quick. You see, this is the beauty. Now, you don't want to look for this. You know, like the person who wants to, you want to shorten it. I don't want to make it. It is that quick. Yet.
Getting to the point to be able to do it.
That's what it looks like. Hey, when's it going to show up now? Yeah. He said it's quick. Come on now. That's the whole game of life. If you could be okay with that, you're going to be great. But it's an understanding that the minute it lines up, you're done. It's over. And it's about anything. For me, it was anger. For me, it was anger. And the minute I saw it, it was gone. Not completely. I get angry, but it's not like how I used to be. I was this righteous guy. Man, you know, I'd be in the clinic in a staff meeting. People would say some way of approaching it and say, how dare you? That's not the way to go about things. You know, you should have seen me. Well, I told you about the newspaper showing up, see? Anybody that quick. And then once you get the understanding of the nature of thought, that's the whole beauty of this. That's why Michael and I wanted to have this day with you about your dreams, because the minute that's then you transcend. You live at a higher level of consciousness or thought. And there are your dreams.
And you can start as simply as saying, I see that, but I'm not going to think that anymore.
You could say that.
And you can still be thinking it and still say, but I'm not going to think that anymore.
This, see, that's you. See, that's your wisdom right now giving you a way. And I would say you're going to do fine then. Now, here's the thing. Everybody will find something like that. But you don't want to use that in the terms of a strategy. But you're right. When you are seeing something and it's giving you a way to be with your thoughts. Hey, I could be in it, but I don't have to go think it. Well, that's beautiful. But that's your creation of what to do through the understanding of thought. And it's come to you as thought, as a thought about how
to think.
How to think. A thought about how to think. That's beautiful. People seeing that?
Isn't it kind of true that you can't really stop yourself from thinking?
Yeah.
That maybe the different way of looking at it is that you just realize what you've done and toss it, sort of go, okay.
Yeah, it's really true. Again, another truth. You can't stop your thinking. You can't stop having thought. There are approaches that try that. So I was learning, I was in graduate school, so this was years ago. I don't do this anymore, so I want to make that clear. But I was learning this cognitive behavioral approach, they call it thought stopping. And you put a rubber band around your wrist and you get a thought and you snap it and you say, stop that. look, here's the thing. Let's go, okay, here's a great way of looking at it. You have a question, go back to the truth. You're not creating thought. Thought is coming through you, through the principles. You can't stop the principles from operating. So there's your truth. You can't stop thought from forming. No way. No way. Wasted energy and frustration. Because it's not you forming thought. When you have an understanding that thought has created your experience, you will get a thought about it. And it may help you with it. Like it may say something like, well, realize it's just a thought. But you don't want to think to do that. You don't want to say, that's what I'll do now. Because now you're back to you. And then now you're monitoring. Now you're working again. Okay, got to keep aware of my thoughts so I realize it's just a thought. You don't have to worry about that, remember? You don't have to worry about that because if you've had a glimpse of the principles, the intelligence and wisdom you are will give it to you again. In another form. So this time, instead of realizing it's just a thought, it might say, oh, you idiot, you took the wrong exit. You know, it might come out like that. See? But you're really true. You caught the truth. You cannot stop thought. Just see that. That's the beauty of us. We're always thinking. Because you are greater than who you are, your own brain. But you can realize that you think. And that's what helps people. Yeah. I'm glad you share that, you see? That's wonderful because it, you know, other people are probably with the same question, you know, so it's good to hear that.
Let me have a go. I think when I was first learning this, I mean, I have no idea. I'm going to say that I must have asked 30 or 40 times for people to explain, what are the principles again? okay, what's mine? And I remember once I was walking on a beach with Sandy Kropp, who's one of my teachers, and in Malibu, and it's a beautiful morning, misty morning. And I must have asked her for like the fourth time in 2 days, what's consciousness again? And she finally just stopped and she said, why are you asking? And I thought about it. It hadn't occurred to me to even think about that. And I realized, and I told her, I said, I think I'm asking because I want to be really clear about what you're saying so I can decide whether or not I agree with you enough to listen. Now, even I could see the flaw in that strategy. Right? I kind of really could see, I'm not going to learn anything like that. And so we sort of, I opened up to it at a new level, even though I'd heard the words lots of times, and I'd heard lots of different people talk about it, and I'd heard lots of different things. And I know for me, one of the things I struggled with was the idea of truth, that these things are true. Because in my mind, in my training in neurolinguistics and all the things that I had trained in, everything was subjective. Right? If it's to do with the mind, it's subjective. And I somehow couldn't see that gravity works whether or not you think it's going to. Right? There are certain principles, there are certain things in life that simply are true. That how we describe them might vary. I might describe them one way, Mark might describe them another way, I might explain them one way, you might explain them a different way. But they're simply true for all people in all situations with no exceptions. And it hadn't occurred to me that there might be things like that to do with the mind, to do with the human experience. And once it did occur to me, I thought, well, I can't think of anything more important to learn than that which is always going to be true no matter what. And so when I was kind of listening to Sandy, you know, we talked about it, and for the first time, I looked behind the words. Like I was thinking, well, okay, mind as a thing and consciousness as a thing and thought as a thing and trying to define the things. And I sort of just saw it more like energy, more like electricity. Right? What the hell is electricity? What the hell is magnetism? Right? We can describe it. We can sort of create an explanation for it. It's just a force that is pre-existing in nature. It was here before we got here. It will be here after we go. And if we understand it, we can harness it in more useful ways. And if we don't understand it, we're likely to fall victim to it because we don't understand what's going on. You know, if I don't understand gravity, if I came to Earth somehow from somewhere that didn't have gravity, I would wonder what evil gods lived in the center of the Earth that were holding my feet down and not letting me fly. You know, I could create all sorts of stories about why things are the way that they are. Once I understand the principle, then I can work with it. I can take it into account. I don't have to apply it. I don't have to do anything with it. Right, how am I going to use gravity to walk? But I can take it into account as I'm learning to do what I do. And for me, I could sense that there was some kind of a larger energy that I was a part of. I've always kind of sensed that, whether I had words for it or not. And at times that seemed spiritual to me, like that's how I thought of it. At times that seemed religious to me. At times it just seemed true. I knew I wasn't in charge. And I knew that there was some kind of an intelligent unfolding because stuff kept working. Right? I didn't have to come and set the rules each day. Okay, let me set gravity to this, and let me set the sun to come out at this time, and let me set the tides to work this way. Like, I didn't have to take care of that. Like Mark was saying, I didn't have to tell my hand to heal if I cut it. I didn't have to step in and run all this thing. And it hadn't occurred to me that that was just true for everybody. And that that was true for my own brain. I didn't even have to go in and tell my brain how to think. Because I spent a lot of time trying to tell my brain how to think because I thought it was broken. So I went in and I tried to teach it. And I had an experience very like what you were saying, Pat, long before I came across the principles, where I'd been suicidal from the age of 13, or so I thought, because I thought about suicide a lot. And people told me that was really bad. You shouldn't do that. So, of course, I tried really hard not to. Right? And that works, right? Trying really hard not to think about something.
That's all you can think about.
Just for about 7 years, yeah. And then one day, I was in my dorm room at college, and the only way I can explain it, I could explain it as a psychotic break from reality, but the only way I could explain it at the time was a giant vacuum cleaner in the sky was trying to suck me out the fourth floor window. And I was holding onto the wall of my dorm room, like for dear life, because if I let go, I was going out that window. And there was a phone, and this for me, cosmic humor, but I knew the number for the suicide hotline, and I reached down and I dialed it and I got a busy signal. And that was awesome. Because I don't think anybody could have said anything to me that was funnier than God damning me to hell like that. Like that was like, it was like, why don't you make it rain in here next, you know? And some of that just broke the spell of thought. You know, that woke me up from the dream enough to kind of realize, oh, okay, let me call a friend and get them to take me out of here. And they did. They came and got me. And I woke up the next morning and I had a thought I had never thought before. And it was like, oh, I don't really want to die. Because if I did, all I would have had to do was let go. I'd never had that thought before. And I realized that that thing that I now sort of, that suicide thought was just a thought that I thought a lot. It didn't have any inherent meaning to it. It was a thought that became meaningful because I was trying not to think it. It was like I picked out a particular piece of dust and gone, whatever that piece of dust does that's floating, I'm going to guide my life by that. I better keep my eye on that dust lest I lose track of it because it could be dangerous. It could come back and get me later. Right? And it was really weird because I didn't stop thinking it for years. It just stopped scaring me. Because I saw it for what it was. It was a thought. I always feel I have to finish the story. Six or seven years later, I finally admitted to my wife this part of my past. We'd already been together for a few years. And I told her that story. And when I got to the bit about the suicide thought, she said, oh, I've got one of those. I call it the divorce thought. And now apparently from time to time I'm not the easiest guy to be married with. I'm sure I am now, but back then, 20 years ago, I was a pain. And she said at first it really troubled her, you know, because she would think if things weren't right between us, if things were unsettled, this isn't going to work. We need to get divorced. And she said one day it just dawned on her, and this is her wisdom, this is her deeper intelligence, I don't want to divorce him. I want to be married to him. And after that, it wasn't that the thought never came again. It was just it stopped mattering. It stopped seeming like it was meaningful, indicative of anything other than the fact that she was a bit stressed. Same as with mine. It was indicative of the fact that when I was really stressed, that happened to be the thought that seemed to come up a lot. It had no more significance than that. Is that a question?
That's a good question there.
Yeah. Hang on. Just wait for the mic.
So what changes that thought? To question it?
But see, this was the thing, is nothing changed the thought. Mm-hmm. The thought didn't change at all. But instead of, it would be like, you know, if I somehow thought that this was a monster, right? Ooh, right? And then one day I just kind of looked at it and went, actually, I'm pretty sure this is a bottle of water. Nothing's changed in this. I'm just no longer seeing it as something that it isn't.
And what changes that? To question the thought? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's this, you know, this is a monster, you know, and now all of a sudden it's not. But what happens before that, that I question, is really a monster?
So, and this is beautiful because this is where people get themselves bunged up like crazy. Is what changes it is insight. What changes it is you suddenly see it differently. What changes it is the intelligence behind the mind coming through and showing you a new thought. It's not you. If you go in and try to change it, that's like you trying to heal your finger, you trying to make sure the waves come in at the right time, you trying to control the universe in a way that we're simply not capable of or designed to do. Nor do we need to, fortunately. And one of the reasons, and this is opinion now, but I think one of the reasons that we struggle so much with our thinking is because we think we have to. We think it's our job to go in there and sort it out. And what's really been interesting to me as somebody who was trained and had 9 separate certifications in how to go in there and sort it out, is that when I stopped doing that, it sorted itself out really quickly. Mm-hmm. It's like a self-correcting mechanism. You know, in the book, I use the analogy of I don't know if you've ever seen on an airplane or something, the self-cleaning litter trays. So the cat comes in and poops, and the weight of the poo is enough to trigger the mechanism to clear the thing and put fresh litter in. It's kind of like that. It's like we got a lot of crap in our heads, right? No. If the cat has to go in and clean it, it's going to make a mess, right? But if the cat just goes on about his day, the mechanism will clear it. You know, so.
Yeah, great.
Thank you,
Lira.
No, just the insight that I just had is that if you know that new thought is going to come and it seems to get better when it's not like stale and old and you're not holding on to it, because it gets stale and old pretty quick, you're thinking. If you knew that new thought was coming and that it would be fresh and more alive, you wouldn't bother to hold on to the other one. You just wait to see what's coming next. Yeah. And it's kind of like being at a train station. You wouldn't get on the wrong train. If you thought there was only one train, you'd get on the wrong train to the wrong place. You know what I mean? Because you're like, oh shit, this is the only train there is.
Yeah.
But if you knew there were more trains coming, you just wait at the station. You know.
Right, and this is that whole thing about trying to control your thinking is we tend to get caught up in thinking, well, there's only two things I could think. I could think this is bad or I could think this is good. And I don't like thinking this is bad, so let me try and make myself think this is good. Well, actually, there's an infinite number of things you can think. Mind has infinite creative potential. We could think any thought that has ever existed and thoughts that have never existed in any moment. So any time I'm trying to choose between, well, which thought would be better, I'm missing the point. I'm on page 1 of a 500-page menu, trying to choose between two things I don't really want. And actually, if I just let them bring me something from the kitchen, at some point they're going to bring something that I love and that's perfect. And that is exactly what I want. And that's that intelligence behind the system at work. You don't have to go find it. You don't have to go chase it. You don't have to go into the kitchen and cook it. It's being brought to you all the time. You get to choose which ones you're going to really dine out on. And you know, if you don't know, like I years ago worked for a prince. And they had very different customs than I was used to, and I was terrified of doing things wrong anyways. And so I got there and was invited to a dinner. And this was, you know, oh my gosh, and what do I do? What's the protocol? And I do all this. And when I get there, there's a spread of food and drink, and it's stunning. It was awesome. And we were in Paris, and I was just, oh, this is amazing. And I remember going through and just beautiful foods and drink. And then after about an hour of chat and stuff, they said, dinner is served. It's like, oh, no. Right? And then I get in, and they have 7 plates stacked. And the way it worked was they bring a course onto the top plate, and you'd eat that. Then they take that plate, and they bring a course. And I was the guest, so everybody waited for me to start eating. Now, because I didn't know that they were going to keep bringing food, I thought I had to eat everything that was in front of me. Right? It's kind of like that. If you don't know new thought is going to continually come, you kind of try and make the best of whatever thought you've got. If you knew new thought was going to be coming, then it doesn't really matter what's on your plate right now. It won't be there in 5 minutes. Something else will come. And that's why you don't have to get stuck in or do something in order to get it to change. It's because the nature of the thing is new thought keeps being delivered. And if you know that's happening, you can wait. And you can carry on. You know, you keep chatting to people, keep doing things. Let me just go a little further, if that's all right. So I could kind of see mind. When I stopped thinking of it as a thing, I was aware that, yeah, I'm part of a larger whole. I'm part of this energy, and this energy, I really get, seems to move in the direction of health. It seems new thought is continually coming. New possibilities keep coming. You know, whatever comes and goes, you know, I sometimes use the metaphor of the sky. Like, you know, if we start thinking it matters what the weather is, well, that would make sense if we're the little person on the ground. But actually, we're the sky. At the level of mind, we're the whole thing. It's happening inside us. It isn't happening to us. And at that level, I don't know this for a fact, but I don't think the sky cares what weather it's having. I used to really care what emotions I was having and what feelings I was feeling, and I didn't want to feel these ones. And it would be like the sky going, oh no, I've been raining for 3 days now. I am sick of this. Right? The sky's just the sky. It is all unfolding inside of it. It doesn't have to get involved in that process. And that was my experience. That suddenly made mind less conceptual to me and more experiential. We talked about consciousness, and I when I didn't think of it as a thing, but I started to kind of look for the feeling of it, the experience of it behind the words, beyond the words, before the words, I could kind of have a sense of how amazing it is that we can experience anything. It really felt like a gift to me. You know, that we can experience thought as real, that we can experience life, that we can experience connection between human beings and animals and life at this deep level, that we can experience the energy of life. You know, it's one thing to say it's there. It's a whole nother thing to actually be able to have an experience of it. And suddenly that became a beautiful gift. It was like, how cool that we can do that. And then for me, the big thing with thought, my big, you know, having had my little suicide thought insight, the big insight came later when I tried to use it for a long time, right? So when I was learning the principles, I'm going to apply them, right? I'm going to find out, you know, people like Mark would keep saying, well, there's nothing to do. And I'd like, yeah. I'll take care of this bit, right? I'll find the 7-step system that we can work this out into, and then I can, and so I kept trying to figure out what to do about thoughts that didn't work. Like, well, okay, well, what can I do with it if I'm feeling my thinking? What can I do with a thought that's not working for me? And the best thing I could come up with at that time was not think about it. Like, why? Well, I notice, well, if I don't think about stuff that freaks me out, I don't get as freaked out. Now, it seemed like a bit of a cop-out to me, right? It didn't actually seem like a brilliant insight, but it kind of worked. It kind of made things better to not think so much about the stuff that I didn't like thinking about. And I went and I talked to, again, Sandy Kropp, who's one of my teachers, and I asked her about it. I said, well, you know, if you had somebody, I had a client at the time who was obsessed with death. And I said, you know, if you had somebody who was, you know, just always thinking about death and you know, got really scared and it affected everything in their life, what would you do? And she said, well, I'd tell them they don't have to think about it. And I was like, yeah, that's what I told them. I didn't. And then we talked further. And she said, what do you think I just said? And I said, well, you said tell them not to think about it. That they don't have to think about it. And she said, no, that's not what I said. And I said, yeah, it is. I wrote it down. She said, well, I get that you wrote it down, but it's not what I said. I said, what did you say? She said, you don't have to think that. Now, for me, that was a top of my skull being ripped off and new thought being poured in moment. Because somehow it hadn't occurred to me that everything is up for grabs. that there is not a single thought that comes through my head that I have to hang on to, that is more true than any other thought that comes through my head. That literally in any moment I could just change my mind and think differently. Now, not as an act of will, like, okay, which one am I going to think? But that if I'm willing to let it flow, I could think a million things about death. And 990,000 of them are lovely. And 10,000 of them are really scary. I don't have to not think about death, but I don't have to think those thoughts about death all the time. I can think anything about death. And that was true about everything. And literally for me, it was like watching my world dissolve. It was like thinking, like, I don't know if, I think Star Trek, they sometimes have the holodeck and everything looks really real. And then there's that moment when they turn it off where it starts getting shimmery and then it disappears. It was like that. It was like, I didn't know I was on the holodeck. I thought I was in reality. I thought I was living in the real world. And suddenly the real world got shimmery. And I realized, oh God, this was all my thinking. And the only thing, and it was interesting, because I don't know how long I sat there. It felt like hours. It was probably 5 minutes. I don't even know. I got scared because, like, reality was disappearing on me. And it was really interesting because the way it appeared to me, and it's just, again, the lovely intelligence of the mind giving me an image that was comforting to me, was that as everything made of ice turned to liquid and began to flow away, there were just three boulders in the stream that didn't move. The reality of mind, of this intelligent energy, the reality of consciousness, this gift of awareness, and the reality of thought, this infinite creative potential. And somehow knowing that those three things would never change made it much less scary to let everything else flow. And that was for me where this went from a series of neat ideas that I was trying to understand and apply to actually seeing, holy crap, this is just how it works. And like Mark said, doesn't mean I don't get caught up, right? I love, my favorite quote probably about it is, it's in the book, David Bohm, the physicist, who really was exploring consciousness at the level of physics. And he said, thought creates the world, and then says, I didn't do it. And it's like that, right? The whole point is consciousness makes it seem real so that you would say, well, that's not my thinking. Well, I get that this is thought, but that's not thought. Well, this might just be my thinking, but it seems to me that. Well, look, the whole thing's made of thought. That's the one bit that isn't up for grabs. We know it's thought. The question is, does it seem to me like I need to do something about it? Because when I see that the nature of it is flow, there's really nothing to be done about that, especially when I can really see. And again, this is somebody yesterday, we talked a little bit about trust and how there's an element of trust to it, but it's trust in the way that you trust the sun's going to come out. It's not trust in something you've never seen before. It's trust in something that's been happening since the day you were born, since before you were born. That wisdom comes through. You do wake up from the dream, whether it's in 3 days or 3 years. At some point, you see through it. And there may or may not still be things to handle in your life, right? We all have logistics in our life that we need to take care of. But it no longer seems like a dragon that has to be slain, a giant obstacle that has to be overcome. I wrote in one of my books a story that came to me when I was working with a client. And it was a story of, a teacher talking to a student. And the teacher said to a student, imagine that you fall asleep and you dream a dream of great adventure. And in the dream, obstacles appear. And your adventure is to find your way around or through the obstacles. And so a giant wall appears in your path. And you, out of your imagination, pluck out a sword and cut a doorway in the wall and walk through it. And then a dragon appears. And you create out of your mind a saddle and put it on the back of the dragon. And you use the dragon to fly. And whatever comes up, you find some amazing way of playing with within the dream. But then at some point, almost like towards the end of a video game level where the boss comes out, you know, you're suddenly faced with not one obstacle, but obstacle upon obstacle upon obstacle. There are dragons, there are monsters. It's all closing in. It gets overwhelming to the point where you've got fear pounding in your body and your feet are rooted to the spot and the monsters are coming closer and closer and closer and the flames are coming up all around you. What do you do? And the student thought for a moment and then she said, oh, I know what to do. I'll wake up. And for me, the more we start to see that we just live in a world made of thought. We live in the feeling of our thinking. The less it seems like it makes sense to go in and fix it. Because I know that as soon as I wake up, it's going to look different anyways. And there's so much freedom in that. And there's so much ease in that.
Oh my God, I don't think people could get any fuller. It was beautiful.
We have a cheesecake analogy that we use on some of the coach training that we do, that this stuff is like eating cheesecake. It's really rich and delicious, but there comes a point where one more bite of cheesecake and you're going to throw up. So I think maybe let's put in some time to digest.
Sure.